Hoosiers are proud of that. But Carl Graham Fisher is one of the most intriguing individuals I've ever read about. This book is, the research by Brian Ingracia is really something else. And I'm just showing this to Rich. This section of the book is just the notes.
Wow.
Tremendously, incredibly well researched. But here's the scoop. Carl Graham Fisher, born 1874 in Greenburg, Indiana, and he was born with terrible astigmatisms, which even lenses and surgery couldn't completely help. His family was sort of poor, but he and his brothers had an entrepreneurial spirit. And like so many people who got involved in automotive business, started out as a bicycle guy, had a bicycle shop. And then he and his friend, Joseph Allison, decided that they would, they'd invent a new, James Allison, excuse me, a new headlight for automobiles. And they did, and it was an acetylene headlight, precursor to the model, the electric ones that came about 10 years later. And soon their company, Presto Light, Presto-Light, ahead of their time, even with playing with corporate names, was so valuable that it was sold to Union Carbide for $9 million in 1913. That is the equivalent of $250 million today. This guy was 30 years old. He's worth $250 million. He opened the first automobile dealership in the United States and began working on a track. In those days, racing was thought to be the way that you tested cars, the way you understood how they would work, the way that you would improve them. They were mostly on dirt tracks, and it was very dangerous. So there were a lot of motor cars made in Indianapolis. They were Stutz Bearcat, for instance, and others were made in Indiana. So that was not a place unknown to automobiles and automobile parts. And also because Indiana is sort of at the time in the middle of the population center of the U.S., and well connected by rail, it was a good place to manufacture things. But it was not a great place to test them. So, and to skip ahead, Fisher and his friends build the original Indianapolis 500 Speedway. Eventually, they will build Speedway, Indiana, a town nearby, using the most progressive, for white people only, but the most progressive sort of thoughts of what a community should have. Lots of recreation, free health care for the workers of the factories. It made sure that everyone had access to education. The kind of progressive era thinking that dominated the late 1800s. But he gets the Speedway going, and he's a real showman. And so he eventually starts to have a big race, a 500-mile race on the bricks, which is what they eventually put down. And I'm skipping ahead here. And it begins this tradition of the Brickyard and the Memorial Day racing. Not without controversy. Some veterans groups are incensed that they're racing on Memorial Day. Other people are saying, no, it's a holiday for everybody. It should be part of what they do. But it was incredibly dangerous. In the early years of the 500, people were getting killed all the time. Racers, even spectators at some point. The cars originally had to have a driver and a side guy who sat with them. They didn't have rear view mirrors.
Wow.
And that became, somebody came up with that at one point. I forget which person that was. But what happened is, as the Speedway grew, the idea of automobiles for people grew. And this is about the same time that Ford is starting to think about assembly line, less expensive automobiles. But what Fisher sees that nobody else sees is automobiles are great, but where are they going to go? They need to go places. So he decides to be one of the people who funds building a transcontinental highway, which we know as the Lincoln Highway. For instance, Route 30 in Pennsylvania, some parts of it are not there anyway. He's going to build a two-lane highway all across America, and he wants a verge in the middle with trees, and it's got to be nice to look at. And he gets that project going. A few years later, he starts the Dixie Highway, which is going to run from Michigan to Miami. And in 1 year, they get the initial part of it done. And he leads a caravan of cars down to Florida, builds a bridge, the Biscayne Bridge, from Miami to Miami Beach, starts draining the swamps, and he creates the resort of Miami Beach. And he's pushing all the time. You know, you want to come drive down here. They're pushing driving out to California now. What people don't realize is a young lieutenant colonel named Dwight D. Eisenhower was on a convoy using the Lincoln Highway not much after it began to be completed, and that became his idea for the interstate highway system that we have today. We can like how many highways we have, or we can complain about it, but whatever, the effect of Carl Fisher is unmistakable. Secondarily, he also decided that, well, sometimes it's too hot in Florida, so he starts developing another little Tony little resort we've heard of from time to time, Montauk, on Long Island. He is just a man full of ideas, constantly working on things, constantly coming up with things. Not the best in romance. Got a couple of things that went a little askew there. And when Prohibition came, he was so incensed that the government told people they couldn't drink, not that he drank very much, that he started bootlegging in the Caribbean into Florida and became quite a lush himself, he and his wife. And he died at age 65 in Miami. He wasn't broke, but his fortune, which had been estimated to be between $50 and $100 million, was down to probably about $250,000. But his influence and the influence of the Indianapolis 500 was worldwide. The most famous racetrack in the world prior to Indianapolis was a place called Brooklands in England. And Brooklands was the place where all the European people, whether it was the Germans, the Italians, the French, all the manufacturers in Europe, raced their cars. And what people don't realize is the reason it was a 500-mile race or a 300-mile race wasn't to see who could go the fastest on each lap, but to see who could go that fast, that long, and have their cars hold up. It's where the best of pneumatic tire technology was built. It's where braking technology, it's where the seatbelt was originally came into use, right? Even though we weren't using them otherwise. But what's really amazing is that I never heard of this guy, you know, and I read, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy. I never heard of any of that. I've driven the Dixie Highway. I love the a song that I heard about it. I've driven the Lincoln Highway. God was on it all the time when I was in college. But what is amazing is that it reminds me a little bit of Tom Yawkey in one way. He was known for incredible kindness to African Americans, helping kids get educated and all that, but he was still wanted to make that money, and he knew that restricted covenants and deeds and things like that would make property more valuable that he could make money on. But in the companies that moved to Speedway, the town adjacent to Indianapolis, all of them offered things that we have people fighting for today. They had collective bargaining. They had health care. They had child care. They had free transportation. His whole thing was, I want to get horses off the street, I'm going to have buses, and we're going to get people places, and trolley cars and trains. He had this idea, which I suppose is a little bit of that Polkian manifest destiny that, you know, America had to reach shore to shore and border to border. But I think his idea was it was to end the urban congestion for people, to give people a chance to see more of the world with trees and with creeks and with rivers and streams. Of course, the minute you start adding all this pollution, that's not good. We know that now. But he was a really fascinating guy. Now, the book it's not a biography of him, but it is a history of how it became a place where the Speedway was used as an early place training pilots. And Indianapolis was involved in creating great improvements in aviation, obviously in what they called automobility. But the overall thing was that you could cancel, that speed cancels time. That if it took you 11 and a half hours to drive from South Bend to, I don't know, whatever, and you could build a highway and people could get there in 3 hours, it meant that America would be less composed of pockets and become more of a nation. We can look back on that and see some naivete in that, perhaps, or we could say, yeah, you could have done that with railroads too. But the idea that, we're a country where people are more likely to change jobs than in most of the industrialized world, more likely to move, we're a much more mobile society. A lot of that has to do with his idea, Fisher's idea of what freedom was. Now, as I was telling you off air, I've reached out to the University of Illinois Press publicity people. I'd like to get this author, Brian Ingracia, on because his research has really been something. And when you think about the people who eventually owned Barney Oldfield was one of those famous car racing guys. He was involved in development track. Later, Eddie Rickenbacker, World War I flying ace, becomes the owner of the track. The number of really important people and visionary people in the country in transportation who intersect at some point with Fisher and his the people he worked with is astonishing. I mean, Amelia Earhart becomes the starter at one point.
Wow.
You learn how the first how finally African American and female drivers were allowed to participate after being held out for a long time. How some people may have snuck black mechanics in late at night to work on their cars because it had been prohibited by these quote gentlemen's agreements. How Jack Johnson was not allowed to race, though apparently he was quite a good driver. And how the Klan was really big in Indiana in those days. And how the mayor of Indianapolis and the governor of Indiana and all these guys were saying, we don't want that around. So it's a really interesting, really involved story. It more than I could possibly include in today's little chat. But it's a really good book.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to reading it and talking with the author down the road.
Yep. And next week we have David Krell back.
Yeah, talking about his new book, Fenway Effect.
It's a good book. I really enjoyed it.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure.
We'll take a break here. It's 16 to go before the top of the hour. Bruce talks with Maine hockey coach Ben Barr next on Downtown.
Hi, this is Jill Sobule, and you're listening to Downtown.